Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll meet with Minnesota's Homeland Security Emergency Management, the Army Corps of Engineers, and the Minnesota National Guard to learn how Minnesotans pull together during disasters and how we can be prepared for anything that might happen. But before we start, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Our soldiers and airmen demonstrate their commitment to our organization through hard work and consistently maintaining our readiness levels above Army and Air standards. This significant investment in the training and equipping of our National Guard as an operational force has greatly improved our ability to support domestic operations across the state during emergencies. When disaster strikes, the citizens of Minnesota count on the National Guard to be ready and equipped to respond to our neighbors in distress. Whether we are responding to floods, wildfires, or blizzards, the Minnesota National Guard must remain always ready to answer the call from our state, our communities, and our nation.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the director of the Minnesota Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, which is part of the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, Director Joe Kelly. Joe, welcome to the show.
Tom, thanks. Pleasure to be back. Thanks for having me.
Sir, you've been on the show many times in the past, and that was when you were still in the Army and you retired as a Brigadier General, but now you are Director of the Minnesota Homeland Security and Emergency Management. Can you explain to our listeners what that is and what your job is as director?
Sure, Tom. As you mentioned, we are part of the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, and a lot of your listeners are probably more familiar with some of my counterparts, the Minnesota State Patrol, Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, State Fire Marshal, et cetera. So I'm one of the divisions in the Department of Public Safety, and our mission is to help Minnesota communities prepare for, respond to, and recover from human and natural caused disasters. So we are what's known as a state emergency management agency, and we are also have a role to play in Homeland Security.
Now, Director Kelly, there's a couple of things I want to ask you about. Number one is I know you've got a facility, a new building up at Camp Ripley. And number two, over in St. Paul, you've got an emergency management center. So if something does happen, you can pull together the necessary agencies and kind of control things from one spot. Can you explain that to the listeners, please?
Yep, and I'm gonna explain that in the reverse order. I'll start with what we call our State Emergency Operations Center, which is in downtown St. Paul, kind of in the heart of state government. So that is a facility where there is a significant incident, becomes an emergency. We will alert and then gather up about two dozen state agencies, along with our federal partners, like the Corps of Engineers that we're going to talk to later in the show, FEMA, the Coast Guard, et cetera. We gather there and determine how it is that we can provide support to whatever local jurisdiction is dealing with an incident, be it a flood, a wildfire, God forbid, a terrorist attack. So from that location in downtown St. Paul, we provide the help, technical expertise, and other resources, equipment to the local jurisdiction. We have a saying in our business that all emergencies are local. They happen at the local level, and our first responders handle it. Our job is to provide support to them by providing the things that are available from state agencies to help them. That facility, like I said, is in downtown St. Paul, and it is the physical location where we do that. Up at Camp Ripley, we have the Emergency Management Training Center, and that is a combination of a training facility for doing the things we do in St. Paul and that they do at the local level, as well as classrooms, conference, meeting space. That facility has been open for 5 years this spring, I think, and we enjoy a great partnership with the Minnesota National Guard. The facility in downtown St. Paul, no surprise to many of your listeners, needs to be replaced. And Governor Dayton has included the funds for that construction of a new state emergency operations center in his bonding recommendation to the legislature.
We're speaking to Joe Kelly, who is the director of Minnesota's Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management on Minnesota Military Radio. Joe, I think the last time you were on the show, we were talking about some training events up at Camp Ripley, And one of the things that stuck with me is you brought in agencies from all over the state, simulated some emergencies. And one of the big things you get out of that, besides the training, is you meet these officials from all over the state, and you know some of the people you're talking to in case there's something that happens out in their locale.
We do. That is one of the primary benefits of any training or exercise event that we do, is that we get to meet people and we learn how to work together. I have an old saying that I live by, and that is that organizations do not have relationships, people do. And the people that make up those organizations bring the organization they're from to the operation. It is no time to be doing introductions and getting to know somebody when you're in the midst of a serious situation. So relationships and trust are really the currency, the grease that makes our business run, and that's why exercises like the one you're talking about at Camp Ripley was so important. We need to get to know each other.
Now, Director Kelly, besides just here in Minnesota, I'm sure you work with the people in your position in surrounding states and with the United States Department of Homeland Security in case you have to get some federal assistance depending on what type of emergency happens?
We do. First and foremost, we work with our counterparts across the country. Every state has an emergency management agency like mine. Just as we do at the local level with cities and counties, there's this concept of mutual aid, that we're going to have neighbors help each other first. So we'll go help North Dakota, Wisconsin, and vice versa if they're available. But there are those things that even when you use the help of your neighbors, you're going to have to go to the next higher level of government, and that's the federal government. Our primary contact at the United States Department of Homeland Security is FEMA, or the Federal Emergency Management Agency.
Now, Joe, I imagine a good example of all that cooperation was when we had the bridge collapse here a few years ago in Minnesota, because there were people in from all over the country, weren't there?
That was a tremendous event, tremendous not only from the impact, but from the cooperation and the coordination that everybody brought to that particular incident. It is still held up as a textbook of coordination and communication, but from the local level at the city to the county to the state, surrounding states and the federal government, everybody brought what they had to that operation and went to work. And it's something that Minnesotans should be proud of, to know that that's how their local community and their state's going to respond. And we learned a lot from that.
And that one, as I recall, there were even some, were they Navy divers that came in?
Yes, it was. That's one of the examples of needing to go to the federal government for something that we don't have the capability to do. And if you can imagine all that superstructure, all that metal from that bridge down in the water with vehicles trapped in it, our normal dive teams, our sheriffs in Minnesota, are responsible for water recovery. They just don't have the training and equipment to go into that hostile an environment. So through the Department of Transportation over to the Department of Defense and down to the Navy, we ended up with a very capable Navy salvage dive team to come and help recover those vehicles and the bodies of those who had been killed in the collapse.
Now, sir, in a disaster like that, is that something that where your office was in there coordinating? Or that's the first part of the question. Second part was, after all those agencies were there, who was in charge on the ground?
Well, the one who's always in charge on the ground is the local incident commander. So that is going to end up looking like a county sheriff, a police chief, a fire chief. The rest of us are really all there in support. So we're bringing our people, our equipment, our stuff, if you will, in support of him or her who's that local commander.
So every situation is different. And one of the things you do from your emergency management center is help call in people. I seem to recall we had a major rainstorm in Duluth a few years ago, and they needed some dump trucks. And the people that had the dump trucks closest was the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And so they were brought in that situation. And was that part of your job?
That is part of our job, Tom, and that's the brokering and the finding and then deploying, sending of those resources to the local level. We wanted to make it easy for Duluth and those areas to say, hey, we need dump trucks. Without them having to go to all the work of trying to figure out who has them, they make that call to that emergency operations center we talked about earlier, and then we look around the room, we look around the state and to our federal partners to see who can best provide that to make it easy for that local incident commander.
Now, Joe, one last question. We're just about out of time in this segment. Is there some type of prearrangement for deciding who's going to pay for this, for whoever's responding to these emergencies?
Ultimately, the first payer is, again, at the local level. It's a local, all disasters, all emergencies are local. They bear the cost. But if it's a significant enough event, then we get into what's called disaster relief, and that's when the state and federal government helps reimburse those local jurisdictions for the extraordinary costs of dealing with an incident, dealing with an emergency.
And that's there, so there's no hesitation on behalf of anyone to jump in and get to it. There's a way they can get those dollars back into their budgets.
That's correct, and we talk about that all the time. We train on it. Don't worry about finances, eligibility, reimbursement. You do what's right for your community. We'll do what's right for the state, and then after the fact, we'll go through and figure out how to come up with the proper financial support for the locals.
Thank you, sir. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by the Army Corps of Engineers, and we're going to talk a little bit more about emergency management and homeland security. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We're talking today about emergency management and homeland security, and my co-host for the show is Director Joe Kelly. And, Director, we kind of ran out of time in that first segment, but happy to report that we've got Mark Koenig joining us from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District. He's the emergency manager with responsibility for disaster planning, preparedness, response, and recovery operations. Mark, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Good afternoon, sir. It's a pleasure to be here.
Mark, your title is Emergency Manager with the St. Paul District. Can you tell me what all does that encompass?
Well, as the name implies, Emergency Manager is more than just the emergencies itself. It started out years ago mainly flood-related, but over time, with the current situation we have, it's now taken on more preparedness and also covers both natural disasters or man-made disasters, which has become more important in recent years. And then we also get involved with the recovery operations with interagency, whether it be at state level, federal level.
So you're involved in a lot of the interagency training as well then, so that you know your counterparts and who you might have to work with in times of an emergency.
Correct. As Director Kelly said on his portion earlier, that's one of the most important aspects that we do is we have a regular scheduled planning events for different flood-related and the big quote that we like to go for is make a friend before you need one to make sure that we're familiar with those other agency personnel that we may have to deal with during an emergency.
Certainly. Sounds like a great policy, Mark. Now, this time of year, when Director Kelly's on the show, we're usually talking about flood response because we've had a tough winter and snow's melting and the rivers are running, and it's been kind of an easy winter this year. Are there any concerns?
Well, from our perspective in St. Paul District, anyways, we cover much more than the state of Minnesota. So I am looking at possible flooding up in North Dakota. But from the state level here, we start early in January working with the National Weather Service to look at what their probabilistic forecast is. And then we monitor it and get updates every few weeks. And if it starts to look like we are going to have a flood situation, then we'll start coordinating directly with the state EOC and the National Guard, and we'll start actually conducting some webinars that we do with the different counties and state level. But as you said, this year it looks like there's less of a threat, so we continue to monitor those so we're prepared, whether it be a snow melt or this year we're looking at a possibility of spring because we don't have the snow threat out there, but there is high river levels in many areas that are near historic levels for this time of year. So any heavy rain events could drive possible flooding.
So, Director Kelly, the ground is wet and the rivers are full and April showers are on the way. Any concerns?
Well, we do have concerns, as Mark said. I think the real risk this year, even though those preceding conditions are not favorable, you know, a lot of soil moisture, rivers full, the good news is we don't have any snow or very much snow in most parts of the state, and the frost is gone. The real threat would come from a heavy precipitation event. On the flip side, though, such an early spring means we're going to have a very long brown period before the grasses in the wildland areas start turning green. And that's when I start thinking about my friends in the National Guard, because if we need help, if the Department of Natural Resources or the U.S. Forest Service needs help with fighting wildland fires, we'll be going to the National Guard probably pretty quickly to get their helicopters to help drop water on support of those wildfires. So if it's not floods, it's wildfires, and sometimes we've had both.
So it doesn't sound like you have a good winter any year, sir. Heavy snows are bad, and not enough snow is bad. And
we have a certain amount of job security. I would tell you that floods are probably the most prevalent natural hazard in Minnesota, and that's why it's important to have the great partnership that we have with the Army Corps of Engineers.
And Mark, the Corps of Engineers clearly works with Homeland Security, Emergency Management, and Minnesota National Guard. Do you work with the other agencies around the state as well?
As I said, we work directly with the National Weather Service on a federal level very closely as we look at the potential spring snowmelt. We actually have somebody from our Corps of Engineers, hydraulics and hydrology, actually embedded with the Weather Service on a day-to-day basis to make sure that we're working closely on that. Aside on from flooding, from a state perspective, we have a separate security manager who deals closely with our security aspects with the state agencies, with the law enforcement agencies and such. And we also work closely with the Coast Guard for river navigation and such. So we've got a lot of outreach that we do at both federal and state levels to make sure that we're prepared for any type of event that may come our way.
We're speaking with Joe Kelly and Mark Koenig about emergency management and preparedness on Minnesota Military Radio. Director Kelly, in the news lately, we've already had a couple of tornadoes earlier than I think any time that's been recorded. Is that a harbinger of a tough tornado season, or are you worried about that at all?
Well, I don't know if anybody's good at predicting Minnesota weather. It certainly was a very abrupt start to the severe weather season. You mentioned these are the earliest recorded tornadoes in Minnesota history by really about 2 weeks. But of course, the next day we had snow and blowing snow and strong winds. I guess I would say it's a hunch that it looks like it's going to be a very active weather season. And it really remains to be seen. The weather these days seems to be very hard to predict and kind of volatile.
So every year is a different year, and you just have to be prepared for whatever might happen.
I think if we've been through one flood season, one fire season, we've been through one flood and fire season in Minnesota. They're all different. As my dad used to say, if you don't like the weather in Minnesota, wait till tomorrow. It's bound to be different.
I've heard that one, sir. Mark, if a community has a serious issue and they need the help of the Army Corps of Engineers, how do they request it?
Well, what we require to get engaged is that the requirement is first for the community to commit whatever resources they have, and if they don't have the means to deal with the situation is to go to their county and state levels and work their way up. And then we, the Corps of Engineers, get directly engaged at the request of the state.
So, Director Kelly, is that something you talk about when you're going around the state giving these speeches? What's the order? What's the priority? Who do you go to, and where do you go first to request help?
We do. We always talk about that response framework that we go through from the local to the county to the state to the federal. But Mark and his organization have a very big role to play in the preparedness. If we know that we're going to have an active flood season and communities are going to need help with constructing flood defenses and those kinds of things, they are the experts. So we very quickly go to the end of that line and ask the Corps of Engineers to work directly and closely and early and often with those communities that are going to need help building those flood walls and such.
So, Joe, a big part of your job is knowing all the resources that are available and where to go to first.
And knowing the people that have those resources, as we've talked about several times. Yeah, we're kind of the brokers to try to figure out who's the best sort of help, best source of help for our local communities.
Mark?
One thing, as Joe said, is that we do the preparedness. I mentioned the direct engagement when there's a need for us to possibly help by building levees or providing materials. But one of the things in the preparedness end is we are actively engaged in a program that we've got called Silver Jackets. And that program is really a state-run program that we partner with the state coordinators and county coordinators to do this preparedness planning ahead of time. And actually, we have the Corps of Engineers, has developed a template for individual communities to put together an emergency action plan. And that has been proving to be very beneficial in preparing ahead of times. We've done several seminars within the last year in basically communities by counties, and then the individuals go forward and develop these plans so they're prepared.
Thank you, Mark. We're just about out of time. If you could stick around, we need your input in the fourth segment when we come back and talk about that. In the next segment, we're going to be joined by the Minnesota National Guard. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we've been talking about emergency planning, emergency preparedness, and my co-host for the show has been Director Joe Kelly from the Minnesota Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. And Director Kelly, we're joined by an old friend of yours now, Colonel Matt Vodder from the Minnesota National Guard, who is the Director of Strategic Plans and Policy. Colonel Matt, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me again, Tom.
Good to have you here, sir. And as you know, we've been talking about planning and training. I know you're all about training at the Minnesota National Guard, so you should fit into the show really well.
Well, I hope so, Tom. That's getting and being prepared is what we do best in the National Guard.
And a lot of years this time of year, you're getting ready to go up to North Dakota on the border up there and fight some floods, but it looks like so far so good, might not have to do that this year.
Yeah, we have groups of soldiers that are ready to do that. We're ready for wildland fires, should they emerge, and a variety of other emergencies that happen across the state. We stay prepared on a wide variety of different tasks.
So, excuse me, Director Kelly said that with the snow disappearing early this year and some rains coming, we might have some dry periods, and so your Minnesota National Guard troops are prepared or preparing for firefighting.
Sure, our aviators, UH-60 Blackhawks, are equipped with special firefighting equipment, the big water bucket, so that they can dump water on the fires wherever they might be. They go to training every single year to use that equipment. They collaborate with the Department of Natural Resources and their firefighting equipment and train with other states. So last year, a group of our soldiers went out to Wyoming to fight wildfires out there, and they were alerted these last couple of days for some western wildfire missions as well.
So, Colonel Matt, you must have some people at the Minnesota National Guard, you or some of your other officers, that coordinate things closely with Director Kelly from Homeland Security.
Sure. We have a liaison that's assigned specifically to the Homeland Security and Emergency Management Division. We stay in their hip pocket. They stay in ours. Now, the National Guard is in a peer support role to state agencies. We don't self-deploy any place. We wait for Director Kelly and for the governor of the state of Minnesota to tell us to employ our resources to an emergency.
So we've talked many times before about the Minnesota National Guard has kind of a dual mission. One is the federal mission if you get called to active duty to go serve overseas, and then there's the state mission if the governor calls you up because of an emergency or from some other issue, then you call your troops up and jump in and try to help.
Absolutely right, Tom. We train on both of those missions fairly regularly. The vast majority of our soldiers, especially from the signature units across the state, the soldiers that wear the Red Bull patch, 34th ID, 1st 34th Brigade Combat Team, 34th Combat Aviation Brigade, and so on, primarily prepare for our overseas deployments and warfighting missions. A great deal of our support assets that are here in the state of Minnesota are training on that domestic response mission. So we have emergency response elements that are identified throughout the state, different regions. We have four emergency response elements that are specifically trained to handle domestic types of emergencies, traffic control points, crowd control, and such. And they go through special training every year, and they're ready to go at a moment's notice.
Director Kelly, in the news quite often we hear about these oil trains coming through Minnesota back from North Dakota. And I think it was last year, wasn't there a big training exercise up in Camp Ripley where you were practicing on a train derailment thing?
Not at Camp Ripley, Tom, a little west of there, out in Stevens County in the city of Morris, where we were the city and the county and their surrounding partners, along with the National Guard, practiced on and talked through and walked through what would we do if one of these oil trains derailed and threatened the people and the property in the city of Morris. And of course, the National Guard was a big part of that. We used the armory as a facility, I think, for staging of medical resources, that sort of thing. So it's an example of kind of the all-hazards approach that we take toward planning. We don't know if it's going to be a bridge collapse, a wildfire, a flood, or a train derailment. We have to be prepared. And as we prepare for that, the National Guard truly is one of our biggest and best partners. They've got 13,000-plus soldiers and airmen. They've got equipment. They've got facilities. They've got supplies. They come self-contained. They're led. They are a tremendous resource here for Minnesota and our surrounding states. And I like how Matt said it, at a moment's notice. You always know if you're going overseas. But there could be a calamity here in Minnesota, either human or natural caused, and we're going to need them truly at the drop of a hat at a moment's notice. So that's why we do exercises like we did out in western Minnesota.
We're speaking with Director Joe Kelly and Colonel Matt Vodder on Minnesota Military Radio about emergency management and preparedness. Colonel Matt, if there's an emergency, say there is a train derailment, and you're called upon at the Minnesota National Guard to provide some troops, how do you go about picking who's going to be called up and choosing, and how long does it take to get them to respond and show up?
The Joint Operations Center that we operate in the Minnesota National Guard, which is in St. Paul, maintains lists of soldiers across the state that are in various levels of preparedness, and we have specific entities that are identified in various parts of the state that are trained, as I mentioned earlier, to respond to specific types of emergencies. What they will do is, once they get the call to support an operation, they'll determine what type of resource is needed, whether it be personnel, equipment, combination thereof, and then use the rosters and the lists that we continually work on to identify the resources that are closest to the emergency so that we can get them there as quick as possible.
Colonel, I know that within the Minnesota National Guard, you've got a special unit. I think it's the 55th Civil Support Group. They have some real special capabilities. Is that unique to Minnesota, or do the other Guard units have those type of capabilities?
Virtually every other state has a CST element, and they are specially equipped to do chemical testing and monitoring. Our team here in Minnesota is used during Vikings games and used during Gopher football games to work with the civil authorities to make sure that the environment is safe from a chemical perspective.
And we've had them on the show a couple of times, and one of the great stories was they told us about when the old Viking stadium was full. They went in there and did a sweep one day just early in the game, and they located one person in a suite. They come to find out had some type of a medical exam the day before with some radioactive isotopes, and out of 55,000 people, they found that guy, even though he had this medical procedure a day or two beforehand. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, these guys are incredibly well-trained, and they've got state-of-the-art best equipment that's available to them. They were an integral part when we did the bird flu stuff last year, so... Or is that 2 years ago, Joe? I can't remember anymore. Time seems to run together.
I think it's two.
But they keep training, and they keep prepared for it. And an outbreak like we had for the bird flu is probably not going to be as devastating as it was last time because of all the lessons that we've learned and the types of equipment and capabilities that we have developed since.
Director Kelly, I've been doing this show for 6.5 years, and I always learn something. But we've got some pretty terrific resources available right here in Minnesota, don't we?
We do, and you know, we were talking before we came on the air that Minnesotans, Americans, assume that somebody's going to know what to do when a really bad thing happens. But that doesn't, that capability, that capacity isn't automatic or natural. It comes from an investment of resources and the training and the commitment of people like the soldiers and airmen that serve with Colonel Vodder, with the great federal civil servants that work in places like the Corps of Engineers. It takes an investment, but I do believe that the good people of Minnesota and across the country expect that somebody's going to know what to do and is going to be there when some of these terrible things do happen.
Colonel Matt, I got to ask you one question. If I was a young man today and I was thinking about going in the military, there's a big difference between the reserves and the National Guard in that the reserves have a federal mission. The National Guard has this federal and state mission, and if I wanted to be useful to my state, my friends, my neighbors, as well as to my country, the Guard's kind of the place to be, isn't it?
Well, the Guard keeps you close to home. It allows you to serve your country, for one, but more so than that, it allows you to serve your state and your neighbors. Minnesota takes care of its Guard family. It takes care of its military family, for sure, but its Guard family in particular. We're hometown soldiers. We live and work in our communities. We train to help neighbors. That's what we do. And it's a heck of a job. I've been in it 36 years now, so I enjoy it.
Been there for a while. You know what you're doing. What would you say to young people today if they were thinking about joining the Army or Air National Guard here in Minnesota?
Well, either one of those two organizations is going to provide you with things that today you probably can't imagine. Relationships, opportunities, all of this, all of those things that when you look back on a career, you can hardly believe that you had an opportunity to do some of that stuff. I'll be taking some of the soldiers, a soldier from Civil Support Team from the SERF-P organization here in the state, one of our agency partners from Task Force 1, and the emergency manager from St. Paul, and we're going to be supporting an earthquake response exercise in Croatia in April. So you tell me what other job gives you an opportunity to travel to a partner country and do something that not only helps other people in another country, but builds your skills to bring back home so that you can apply it toward your mission for your state neighbors.
Colonel, I thought it used to be join the Navy, see the world, but I guess you can do it as an airman or a soldier as well.
All kinds of opportunities, Tom.
Thank you, sir. Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to get a commissioner's corner. We're going to talk about situational awareness and some things that our neighbors and all the people in Minnesota can do to help keep the state safe. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In today's show, we're going to continue talking about emergency management, and we're going to specifically hone in on situational awareness. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Shelito.
The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs offers disaster relief assistance when a natural disaster strikes. Disaster Relief Assistance provides up to $1,000 reimbursement to veterans and dependents that live in an area affected by a natural disaster, such as tornadoes or flooding. This assistance is available when declared a state of emergency by the governor of Minnesota. Veterans and dependents must provide receipts verifying proof of the pre-approved expenditures listed per type of disaster. Please contact your county veteran service officer for more information or assistance in applying for disaster relief benefits. Find your CVSO by calling 1-888-LINK-VET, MDVA's one-stop customer service line for all Minnesota veterans and their families. That's 1-888-LINK-VET.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. In today's show, we've been talking about emergency management and Homeland Security. And our guests have been Director Joe Kelly from Minnesota's Department of Homeland Security, Mark Koenig from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and Colonel Matt Vodder from Minnesota National Guard. And Director Kelly, in this segment, we want to talk a little bit about something that's called See Something, Say Something. And it's an effort to make the public to be aware of their surroundings and what's going on. And I think you and I talked before. To me, I'm thinking of World War II, where they say loose lips sink ships. It's just the opposite of that. We're trying to save people. Can you tell us what that's about, sir?
It kind of is the opposite. It's saying that if you see something that doesn't look right and is out of place, you need to notify the authorities in case that suspicious activity has some harmful nexus behind it. The This is a cooperative effort between the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, United States Department of Homeland Security, and some local partners. We don't want people to be worried about terrorist attacks. We want people to be vigilant. The best way to kind of explain this concept might be to tell a little story about an incident that happened in a small town in Minnesota a few years ago. And there was a woman who was standing at her kitchen sink, preparing a meal, doing dishes, whatever, looked across the street where there was a mini storage facility located. And she saw a young man go into one of those storage units, which is not unusual at all. People put stuff in, take it out of storage all the time. What was unusual is that this young man went into the storage unit and closed the door and didn't come out for a couple of hours. And the woman kind of kept her eye on that and thought, that just doesn't look right. So she called the local police, who went to that unit and checked out what was happening. And what they discovered was this young man was using that storage unit as a place to make explosive devices that he intended to detonate at the local school to do to harm people. So by this woman seeing something in her neighborhood that she just didn't feel was right, calling the authorities, who knows what happened, but what would have happened, but we certainly can understand that she probably prevented some people, particularly school children, from getting hurt. So the moral of the story is, and the slogan that we use is, if you see something, say something. And that is what we as citizens have a responsibility to do in order to keep our community safe.
So in that story, that lady did two things really well. She observed something that looked strange, and she didn't try to do anything about it herself. She called the local officials, called local law enforcement or the sheriff, let them check it out. She's done her job.
She has done her job. We don't want untrained citizens to try to be heroes and take matters into their own hands. We have great law enforcement organizations in this state. They know how to investigate and approach suspicious activities and follow up on these things. And most of the time, they might not amount to much. But they know what they're doing. They've been trained. They have the resources and the training to do it. So, yeah, just the most important thing we can do is let our local law enforcement know if we see something that looks out of place.
Joe, I know you cooperate with the United States Department of Homeland Security, and we've got a short clip that we want to play that supports this. See something, say something. Sam, could you play that, please?
I'm a firefighter.
A teacher.
I'm a farmer.
I'm a barber.
A waitress.
A mom.
We're all part of your community. Every day we move in and out of each other's busy lives.
It's easy to take for granted all the little moments that make up our everyday.
Some are good,
others not so much.
But that's life. It's when you experience a moment of uncertainty, something or someone's behavior that doesn't seem quite right.
These are the moments to take a pause.
Because if something doesn't feel right, it's probably not.
It's not about paranoia
or being afraid.
It's about standing up and protecting our communities.
One detail at a time.
Because a lot of little details can become a pattern.
We
trust our instincts.
Just like you should.
Because only you know what's not supposed to be in your everyday.
So protect your everyday.
If you see something suspicious, say something to local authorities.
Colonel Matt, in the military, I think you refer to this as situational awareness. Just being aware of what's going on around you at all times. And you train for that, don't you?
Absolutely. We do that when we're going into a combat environment. And we do that here in the homeland as well. It's very, very important to understand what normal looks like within your environment. You remember the Chattanooga shootings. As a result of that, we had some hypervigilance, some additional training on teaching our soldiers how to keep themselves and their families a little bit more safe in an environment that might be, in some instances, a little bit more dangerous than what we're used to. So, yeah, being able to look at what's going on around you in your environment, maybe pull one of those earbuds out rather than listening to your music on your Walkman or your iPhone when you're – or Walkman, I just aged myself, didn't I? Your iTunes or whatnot, listen to what's going on around you. Understand where traffic is. Can you hear somebody coming up next to you? Have you checked around the outside of your car? Have you looked at the entrance and possibly some of those blind spots that are existing around you? It's just being able to understand those types of things.
And if you see something out of place, call the local authorities. Let them investigate.
911.
Mark, I know the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has, as I recall, about 700 employees, and you've got office buildings that are open. Are you watching people walking by and being observant?
Being part of the Department of Defense, we stress the same thing about the being vigilant at all times. Being our main office in downtown St. Paul, right? We rent commercial space in the downtown area, so we're right on the skywalk or the skyways of the city, so anyone can come and go. Additionally, with some of our outer facilities at our recreational sites and stuff, we have seen much monitoring pictures, and we've turned that information over to law enforcement, and in some cases they have tracked down individuals, made some arrests, and potentially precluded something bad from happening. So it's a matter of being vigilant and reporting, even if it doesn't lead to anything.
Director Kelly, just got about a minute left. Can you sum up our thoughts for today?
Well, I think we're all concerned about Homeland Security, and too often we think about Homeland Security in terms of the foreign terrorist threat. The threat from within, domestically, is something that we should be, particularly in Minnesota, we should be more concerned about that than we should be about foreign terrorists. Homeland Security starts with hometown security, and that starts with each and every one of us, because we know what belongs and what doesn't belong in our neighborhoods, in our schools, in our places of business. And somebody else isn't going to do this for us. As citizens, we need to accept it's our responsibility that if we see something that looks out of line, out of place, that's suspicious, we need to say something.
And the last word on that we've said several times this segment, don't try to fix it yourself. If you see something out of place, call your local friendly police officer, call your sheriff, let them do their jobs and get out of the way, and let's all be safe. Gentlemen, we're out of time for the day. Thanks for joining us on today's show on emergency management and Homeland Security. We're about out of time for this show. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Mark Koenig, Colonel Matt Vodder, Director Joe Kelly, Commissioner Larry Shelado of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.